husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today I'm joined with David Beck, the Young Men General President, and Rosemary Wixom, the Primary General President. I warmly welcome you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Matt.
I am thrilled to have you here. We have had a previous episode discussing principles or the foundational principles of marriage, and both of you were so good at helping me better understand the principle of cleaving. And I know that comes from a couple of sources, obviously, from surely your experiences, from the way that you are living your married life and family life, and most importantly, I know this for a fact because I know you both personally, from your devout devotion as a disciple to the principles of the gospel. So I am thrilled that we have the opportunity to continue talking about one of those foundational principles in marriage of cleaving to our spouse and to none else. So with that in mind, I thought what we could do is just frame this around a statement by President Spencer W. Kimball and lay this as a foundation of the appropriate ability to cleave or to stick to a spouse, to adhere to a spouse, to follow closely or catch by pursuit our spouse in this relationship. President Kimball said, "The words none else, cleaving to spouse and none else, the words none else eliminate everyone and everything. The spouse then becomes preeminent in the life of the husband or wife, and neither social life, nor occupational life, nor political life, nor any other interest, nor person, nor thing shall ever take precedence over the companion spouse." What's your first initial response to that, or what just pops out? That's quite a statement, actually. And if I think there's ever a statement that could be used within marriages and families today, this is a foundational statement because we don't seem to be doing very well at this.
I think what comes to my mind is the word boundaries. We're going to have some fixed and unshakable boundaries as to our behavior and things that we certainly can do. President Faust said that we're to avoid the very appearance of evil by shunning any questionable contact with another to whom we are not married. That's a standard that I think if everybody could just make that commitment, I'm going to avoid the very appearance of evil. That's my boundary. Of course, there's situations we get into unintended, but we've got to, with all of our energy, adhere to standards that will eliminate any questionable activity.
This is so good. This is so good. Really quickly, before we leave this thought is, what can one do? We'll talk more about all of this, but what can one do with unintended situations? I'm glad you brought that up and that came out. I don't know if you intended to bring up unintended, but I like that because sometimes we are exposed to situations. So what can we do in circumstance where you're like, oh, I'm in a circumstance here that all of a sudden I'm feeling either through promptings of the Spirit or through common sense, this is not good and I didn't intend. I have my boundary set. What can one do about that?
You can be honest with yourself. In other words, be aware that, yes, this could happen and be on guard. And don't be surprised by the fact that it might happen, but then act.
Okay.
Immediately and evaluate where you are and make the choice then.
Good.
To change.
Good.
And I think another thing is learn from those unintended circumstances.
That's good.
And find ways that you can in the future make sure that that doesn't happen again. Create ways so that you don't have that situation come again.
That's good.
That could be a situation. That could be a person that you need to avoid.
That's right. Websites, social media situations, all could be on this. As all of a sudden we learn from the past, I'm reminded of that old saying of, you fool me once, shame on you. You fool me twice, shame on me. And so I like this aspect. We are in a learning environment and we can take note of circumstances that come up and then how we have responded and how we should respond into the future.
We need to prepare ourselves. Take something like pornography. This is an overflowing scourge today, and it's our youth are facing it and adults are facing it. You've got to think beforehand how you're going to avoid this and prepare for that. But if perchance something pops up on the screen, like Joseph, Potiphar's wife, you shut it down and you leave immediately.
Good.
And those are conscious decisions that need to be made beforehand.
Good point. And I like your example of Joseph. I love the phrase in that he got him out. You know, when the situation was out of control and he knew that he was not in where he needed to be, he wasn't afraid to get himself out of the situation for whatever that might be. Rosemary, you mentioned about being honest with oneself, which I think is the key foundational element in this. I've heard statements that the best filter on the internet is actually the individual themselves. Now, that's not discounting the help that we get, because we should have help and use good precautions. Honesty with self, but also being honest with others. I've appreciated individuals in my life who have actually been bold enough and brave enough to say, I'm uncomfortable with this circumstance. And they do it in such a way where it's very natural. It doesn't make anyone feel uncomfortable. It's, I'm not very comfortable here. I think I need to change this, or I don't think I'll be doing this. And I've always appreciated their honesty with themselves, with their Father in heaven, with their covenants, but also with others, and or quietly removing themselves in circumstances to protect them.
Absolutely. And don't be afraid to say, I feel, and then express your feelings, because that's the Spirit talking to you. And those warnings come. They're very quiet. But when we recognize them and act immediately, then often we look back and see the relief and the reality of what could have happened.
Good.
Recognizing those feelings, like you mentioned, that's so important. And so there's preparation to be able to be in tune to those spiritual promptings, personal prayer and scripture study, and attending the temple and keeping your covenants. Those help us when we're in those situations and we need to make those decisions, that we do have the guidance of the Spirit in our lives. And if we start losing the discipline of the religious observances in our lives, then we open ourselves up to the rationalization that would allow us to get into situations or into behaviors that could cause us to not cleave.
That's right.
To our spouse and to God.
That's so good. And so that discipline of gospel observance and gospel living permits, allows, encourages the Spirit to be with us always. And I love how Nephi describes this. He says that the scriptures will tell us all things that we shall do. And so with the voice of prophets, whether that be prophets of past or living prophets. But then also he goes just two verses later, he says, and the Spirit will show us all things that we must do. So we have this experience of being instructed, as well as often the Spirit doesn't just say, don't do this, but it'll often show us how to do and how we can get in or out of circumstances that are appropriate. This is a wonderful element of discipleship. And that does, well, discipleship, the meaning of disciple actually comes from the root word of discipline. And that discipline helps us to become in tune. You mentioned boundaries. Let's talk about other types of boundaries that help us to be able to do what President Kimball was saying of eliminating of everything else. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't talk to anybody else or be involved in lives. That's not what he said at all. As a matter of fact, two words jump out. Preeminent, the spouse becomes preeminent in the life of the husband or wife. And the other one is never let anything take precedence over your companion spouse. What are some boundaries or some good practical guidelines to help us to make sure that our spouse is preeminent in our life and that our spouse is never second place or something else jumps over and takes precedence? What thoughts might you have on that? Good boundaries or guidelines that will help us to cleave appropriately.
The Spirit will teach you, but there are just basic, simple boundaries. And I think they begin by not allowing yourself to be in the presence of another alone. I mean, that sounds very black and white, but you wouldn't want to ride home with a member of the opposite sex from a church meeting. You wouldn't want to find yourself alone in a meeting where subjects went other than church discussion. You just simply would want to guard against, and your conversation and the topic of the conversations. You have control of those situations. The internet is another factor here. I mean, we have a tendency to say things and type things that we ordinarily would not say face to face.
That's kind of an interesting thought, as so many people are different creatures when they're on the internet or have the barrier of some technology between them and another person. They often say and share things that are completely, wholly inappropriate. And some of the research just out would say, and they never would do that in a face-to-face situation. Never would they contemplate that.
No. And yet you let yourself go there. There are boundaries and there are danger zones, so to speak, that we do fully need to be aware of.
Good.
I think the internet is something we need to talk about a little bit more because particularly something like Facebook, it's so easy to reconnect with people from our past, a past boyfriend or girlfriend or someone that you're currently associated with at work or in some other organization. Perhaps in the past when we didn't have this technology, you had to be more intentional to reconnect with someone. Well, now it's real easy. One needs to keep their heart locked. Personally, I think it's a mistake to reconnect with a past boyfriend or girlfriend of the opposite sex.
I agree, David.
I think that's a discipline people need to consider, and there's rationalization that can go on there. You don't know where they're at in their lives. Relationships, there are good days and there are bad days, and we just need to protect ourselves at all times.
That's a good point. Some people might react to this type of a statement of saying, oh, come on, it's not that big of a deal. Like, I'm never going to do this. I think that's the way it takes place with all things in our lives. I would never do this. And then all of a sudden we find ourselves slowly getting into trouble or in circumstances that we wished we would have avoided in the beginning. But little things do make big differences. I mean, the Lord teaches this when he's trying to establish the context of Zion for the saints to have this experience where, by no means is this ironic, one heart, one mind, one energy. These are all the principles of what cleaving really is, as we learn to love with all of our heart, might, mind, and strength, and we cleave unto that love, into that citizenship. So here he's teaching about Zion, and I love in Doctrine and Covenants section 64 where he says, wherefore, be not weary in well-doing. And then he says, for ye are laying the foundation of a great work. And then here's this interesting little line. And out of small things proceedeth that which is great. I don't know if we can ever be too careful in something that is so critical and important as our marital relationship and our relationship with our families. So when we talk about, oh, I don't know if I would even want to reconnect in this situation, I think that this is actually good advice to step back and say, well, some might say it's not a big deal, but actually those small things can make a huge difference in the long run. And sometimes we could even ask ourselves the question, well, where will this go? What is the value of doing this and where could it possibly go? I learned that as a missionary where I had a companion saying, oh, that investigator is really cute. And I'm thinking, where could that possibly lead, even entertaining that thought in the circumstances? It doesn't matter if you think that could lead to flirtation. Where is that going to lead? Bad places.
Sure. And so these fantasies that can crop up in the mind, you avoid those roads that lead to that. But there's another aspect to social media and texting and email. The Lord didn't say cleave to your network, cleave to all your friends and associates. There's a commandment to cleave to your wife. And I think there's a lot of time that can be devoted to reaching out and connecting and staying up to date with a network that has really little value in terms of your covenant with God and the welfare of your relationship with your spouse. And so I think we need to make sure that we put some boundaries in terms of just the time commitment of trying to stay up with this network of ours that is nice, it enriches our lives, but there needs to be some discipline there in our lives, or else that can hurt the relationship.
It's quite staggering when you start to look at some of the studies that are coming out in some of this new technology. Here's one of the interesting elements of this is it hasn't been going on very long, so there's not a lot of studies that have been conducted in longevity. But yet it's amazing and it's staggering of how much time is being used on all of these type of technologies. This is a joke in our family. We go through our telephone experiences with our younger children or our teenagers, et cetera, and we say, do you know how many texts that you sent this month? And they're saying, I don't know, maybe 10. No, Lord, maybe 10,000. You know, and they don't, you don't realize when you start to get consumed in this that these hobbies, these interactions, etc., does require time. Now, if my children were sitting with us today, this is where they would roll their eyes in the back of their heads and they would start to say this with me because I've said it so many times. And they would take their hands and I move my hands up and down like I'm weighing something out when I say this because this is a family, almost a family joke, but I believe in this. If you're doing this on the right hand, that means you're not doing this on the left hand. And so we need to weigh those out and make sure we choose to do the best thing. So when you were speaking, I thought, isn't this true? As we may be anxiously engaged in a cause or Facebooking and interacting, but we may not be interacting with the most important individuals. And the lost time, we may be doing something okay or even good, but there's better things out there that we could be doing.
And there's some great things too, like your church calling. I mean, it was given to you by your ecclesiastical leader and you're asked to do your best to magnify your calling. And yet, even something like that, we've got to evaluate the impact we're having on our relationship with our spouse and be very sensitive to that.
Nicely said.
You know, having served in callings where I spent a lot of time away from my wife, this is something that I think a lot of us really ponder and pray to find where is the appropriate level of commitment and time in terms of time. The Church Handbook of Instruction really, I think, has some valuable, the Oath and Covenant of the Priesthood. For whoso is faithful unto the obtaining of these two priesthoods and the magnifying their calling. Do we understand that we need to magnify our calling as a husband, as a father? That's our most important calling. And we need to think in that context when we evaluate all the other demands on our time. And the handbook is clear that we magnify our calling when we minister in our home. That's the first order of magnifying our calling.
That's so good. And this is an important principle to look at. And some may say it's a fine line, but actually it's a line that is, I don't want to say it's blurred, but it weaves together, is we need to sacrifice and magnify, but we magnify in all aspects of our lives. Have you ever heard of the term bishop's widow?
Yes.
I used to hear that when I was a kid growing up, and I thought, what does that mean? And and it was usually those who were feeling like they were no longer preeminent or really taking precedent in the life of a husband. And this happens often in families. I remember whenever we would have really great desserts or food when I come home, and I'm like going, oh. And this was a joke when I was growing up because we'd go to my mom and say, well, who is this for? Because surely it wasn't for us. When she'd make these great desserts, we always knew it was to serve someone else. Now, while the service is superb and it's important, there is an element where we take this effort to find a way to make sure that in our service to our fellow men and magnifying those opportunities to serve others, that does not make others feel like, oh, that's preeminent. That is the precedence, is we don't have good desserts in our house for our family. It's just for others. And now I'm going to put you on the spot here, but this is an observation because you mentioned about serving and not having chance to be with spouse. And here I am sitting with two general officers of the church, and you are busy and you are required to do many things. Here's something that I've noticed is I know for a fact, many cases when I'll see you, I will also see your spouses. And I know because we've worked a lot together, David, because we're always partnered with Sunday School and Young Men. It is not uncommon for me to see you in almost any given setting where I won't see Robin close by. That must be a choice. So help me understand on this, as two individuals who are serving and magnifying callings, and I don't want to take that out of context here, but you are on that one. How do you cleave to your spouse in that setting and you are dedicated to this, but still at the same token, making sure a spouse is preeminent in your relationship as far as that would be? What are you doing?
I think it's a perspective that we need to keep, and that is that a calling, a church calling, is temporary. Think about it. But our calling to be a husband and a wife or a mother or a father is eternal. And this will come and go, but that is eternal. And when we keep that in perspective, we look for reasons to be together. I look forward to going home and being with my husband for the evening. And he can't do enough for me. And it's the sweetest thing to watch him now make an effort to serve me when I was the one cooking dinner and having it ready and watching it get cold for him, he now is doing the same thing for me. It's kind of a joke at our house. Now he's ironing his own shirts. And that was always my role. But he's willing to do that while I serve. And then we'll work it out later as to how we do it. But it's a sweet feeling to know that we're so supportive of each other that a calling is not going to take precedence over our relationship.
That is so nice. As a matter of fact, I wrote this down as you're speaking, Rosemary, because I love it. Look for reasons. Look for opportunities to cleave together. If that's at the forefront, then things are going well. Looking for opportunities to share, to be with, etc.
At this point in our lives where the kids are all grown and out of the home, it's certainly a lot easier now to find those opportunities for the two of us to do things together because we don't have the kids at home to have to take care of and whatnot. But when we
are you implying that you didn't do that when the kids were home?
When the kids were home, Matt, we had to be a little more creative. It wasn't as easy as it is today. So, for example, we went to lunch every week during the day with kids are at school, and I would go from work and we'd go have lunch somewhere just so we could have – it was a cheap date, and she should have probably expected more from me, but at least we got together. We were able to talk and have some time together. And so I think for younger couples serving in the church, very active, they've got to be creative. You've got to find those moments and make the most of them.
That's so good. And this is a two-way street. Cleaving isn't one sticking to one. It's sticking together. And you brought that up. Both of you have brought that up, is not only do we look for opportunities to share, but we look for opportunities to allow people to share. I've appreciated that about with my spouse, is she's constantly asking to be part of things. And she allows me to talk to her in ways that it's very difficult to talk to others. I can express my frustration as well as my joys and know that I'm in a safe environment because she will keep those things for us. They're ours. In a sense, they become sacred, or which really means they're holy. They give us meaning and purpose because they're ours. And that's the same word for consecration. It's consecrated, to make intensely holy. When we take something and we consecrate it, separate it for something, it becomes very holy to us. And that's a two-way street of helping us to be able to find these opportunities to share and be with each other.
It gets to the point where you can look at each other and you can know what you're thinking. You don't even have to say it because it's so precious and so personal, and you're so grateful for that.
That's one of the great outcomes of cleaving, is that's something that we acquire. It's not just something I think that is inherent. Well, we know each other, so now we can do this. What you're talking about, I think, comes through experience of cleaving together, to know those subtle reactions, to be able to feel and to know each other well enough that we know how that they will react.
And I think that's an important point, Rosemary. Cleaving means that I understand the needs and wants of my spouse, and I'm ministering to those needs and wants. It's understanding, it's being unselfish. It's not according to what I think cleaving is, my definition. I look at what my spouse needs, and by being devoted to that and being faithful to those needs and wants, those righteous desires, is the way I can cleave. And it is exercising our agency, like you've said, Matt. It cannot be reactionary in the sense, well, my spouse isn't measuring up, so I'm not going to cleave.
That's right.
For example, I know a very faithful brother. His wife has been sick most of their marriage. Well, she hasn't been able to do a lot for him. She's been depressed. She struggled with this and hasn't been able to help much around the house. He gets home from work, and he's got the kids to take care of. And the amazing thing is he has cleaved to his covenant with God and to his wife. And the beautiful thing is these kids are all turning out great. And I think that's a blessing that God has given him because he has been faithful to her and to Heavenly Father. And so the blessings of cleaving to your spouse, to your covenants, like we said, can perpetuate through the generations.
That is so good.
It's true, David, what you just said. And Sister Dalton taught us this at conference. The most important thing we can do for our children is to love our spouse. When a child sees the love that parents have for each other and the love they have for the Lord, it secures them in an environment. It affects their future choices.
That's
and
so
their
good.
Perspective.
So good. And as we learn from the gospel setting, whenever we strive to keep our covenants, God will renew us. rejuvenate us, make us better, and make us whole. And I think that that's so wonderful. In this concept of marriage, there might be experiences in daily life where we're pulling our hair out saying, how in the world can we make this work? How can I keep my employment? How can I keep my marriage? How can I keep my family? How can I keep my church calling? How can I keep all of these things going? But I honestly believe, and I've seen this, is our Father in heaven, if we put our priorities right and seek first the things of most value, He will renew us, rejuvenate us, and help us find a way. He'll never ask us to do anything that we cannot do. I believe that.
You're right, because it says in Doctrine and Covenants section 100, your families are well, and they're in mine hands, and I will do with them as seemeth me good. For in me there is all power.
There's nothing better than having our family and our marriage in God's hands, in God's hands. But that takes faith and trust.
We saw a beautiful example of cleaving in our family. My wife's uncle, his wife ministered to him throughout his career, and just hand and foot, just always was attending to his needs. Well, she came down with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. Oh. And we saw a transformation in him that was miraculous. And we saw a man who cleaved to his wife in such a beautiful way. He attended to every need she had, and he loved serving her. He would feed her, and he would bathe her, and do everything he could to make her life better. She would choke a lot, and so he would find the best meat at the supermarket and grind it up.
Oh,
and feed her so that she could keep her strength up. And it was just a 24-hour-a-day responsibility that he carried, such a heavy burden. And when she passed away, he came to our home. We had him over for lunch on a Sunday and said, Doug, how are you doing? And he said, I just miss Mildred so much. I just loved serving her. And I think that's the essence of cleaving, loving someone so much that you would devote everything, all that you have, to that person.
Oh, David, I appreciate you sharing that story, because it reminds me of an elderly brother in our ward who did the same thing for his wife. And she was still living. It was near the end of her life. And in sacrament meeting, he stood, and as part of his testimony, he said, where she goes, there goes my heart. And that's what it said. There was that much love. And can you imagine the ultimate reunion after having that earthly experience of giving and sharing so much?
These are such touching illustrations of such a critical gospel point. And I think that some individuals who don't have that gospel foundation, the greater light, might look at circumstances within these two situations that once a spouse were to pass away, that they would be free. But yet they're finding that the freedom actually came in cleaving, which is ironic to a worldview, because they think, well, if I'm going to stick to my spouse and nothing else, I am limited in my opportunities. I am oppressed. I am bound. I have no freedom. But in truth, it's exactly the opposite. Gospel principles help us make or find freedom in our lives.
There's, the fact that you've got a spouse that is so afflicted with a disease that she can't talk to you, she can't express anything to you, that she is helpless, and yet your life is so wonderful because you can serve that person. And you know, often as a bishop, you'll say to couples that are struggling in their relationship, start serving.
Right.
You love that spouse. You make them so that they can't imagine life without you. I think that's a tonic for the selfishness that comes between us and inhibits cleaving, that we seek ways to serve.
Thank goodness for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, sadly, we are out of time. I have learned so much, and I have so much to think about, which I hope that all of those of you who are listening will do the same. I think of a statement of Elder Oaks where he said, our priorities are most visible in how we use our time. And I've been thinking about that, is making our spouses and our families priority, using our time, prayerfully seek, talk with our spouse of how we can be able to find opportunities to stick to each other, cling to each other, and make this a lifelong pursuit. And we will find freedom, because gospel does set us free. The gospel does set us free. I know that to be true, as I know you do as well. Thank you so much for your help. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.